Yes, we'd like to
Radio.
We'd like to welcome you to another episode of Africa on the Move. That's right, Africa is on the move. And it's a show that is dedicated to serve the underserved communities, the oppressed communities of the world. We would like to be a voice for the voiceless. And tonight we entertain, which we believe is a very important subject that's very rarely spoken about and talk about in the United States, but yet it has a very impact on lives of people throughout the world, billions and millions. And that subject area is Cuba. When we often talk about Cuba, we basically hear negative thoughts and ideas such as it's a country or a government that's run by a dictator, the people are not free, they need democracy. We hear all these kind of things, but yet the one side researching what is Cuba and the real reality of Cuba, you may come up with a different perception. And to talk about this subject tonight, Cuba, its relationship to the world, and to talk about some of the issues that you may hear from time to time around Cuba, such as the U.S. blockade and the heroes who are incarcerated here to fight, we're going to have this general discussion with two individuals who have had the opportunity to travel to Cuba, who have been following and studying this subject area, and who can share their understanding of the realities of Cuba. Tonight we have with us Skip Bailey and Brother Chuck Cuthbert. Our first and foremost, would like to welcome you all to Africa on the Move. Welcome.
Thank you, Lee.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on your show, my brother.
First and foremost, for my guests who may not be familiar with your work and your experiences in terms of being community organizer, political organizer, filmmakers. Can you just briefly give us an introduction of who you are? Start with Brother Skip Bailey. Skip?
Well, hey, man, I'm just a long-time revolutionary activist. I'm from the Midwest, went to Antioch College, believing in a radical transformation, structural transformation of this society that can solve the race question. Very active in the Agitators Defense Committee in the 70s, NAMSA, anti-imperialist movement, isolation of Nelson Mandela around the UN. But more recently, I've been focusing on people of African descent in the Caribbean and Latin America. Just finished a film called Venezuela Rising, about the revolution in Venezuela, with a piece called Under the Radar, which I think is very apropos today, the whole question of race in Cuba. And there's a couple of great articles in the New York Times just recently about the whole question of where blacks find themselves, this transformation that's taking place in the society. So I've sort of been on post on those subject matter.
Okay, excellent. Brother Chuck Cuffin, can you give our audience a little general background on who you are?
Oh, sure. I'm the national co-coordinator of the Alliance for Global Justice. Our webpage is www.afgj.org. And we do solidarity work with Latin America, primarily Nicaragua, Honduras, Colombia, and Venezuela. I've been recently taking delegations to Honduras to provide human rights accompaniment there since the coup in 1990. And, of course, we have always supported Cuba in its struggle to remain free against U.S. imperialism. And my most proud possession is a picture of me shaking hands with Fidel.
Okay, to both of you, starting with you, Skip. If we had to give a general update, a general reality of what life is like in Cuba from your experiences of going there and what you have seen and what you have known, how would that differ from how it has been portrayed in the U.S. and the West?
Well, number one, there's so many blacks in Cuba, you never have any idea that there's so many people of African descent on the island. You know, there's probably 3 million between Santiago and La Maya, Guantanamo and La Maya, Barrancoa, you know, a lot coming in from Haiti and from the Bahamas doing the slavery boats, you know. And you got so many black folks in Havana. I mean, it's the strength of the culture and the resistance to domination by the United States. You get that spirit in Havana, you know what I mean? Long history of left activities. Leading members of the Communist Party in Cuba in the 30s were blacks, longshoremen, guys that went back and forth to Florida. But then you had that long history of Maceo. What you gonna say, man? You know, I think he's just as much of a father of Cuba as Jose Marti. I mean, you know, he was shot 16 times. And that's when that race question begins to get a little tricky over there in Cuba now. So I'm interested to hear what the missing audience has to say. You know, they had a big article about is there really a revolution from people of athletes in Cuba or not? You know, is this new period, what does this new period bring when they're talking about reducing the social contract, the social net for the Cuban people? Particularly given the fact that, you know, all these small enterprises are being financed by whites who left Cuba over the last 35 or 40 years have gotten a foothold in the United States. And history will show us that blacks stayed behind to defend the revolution. So it's a tough time.
Okay. Brother Chuck, give me your general perception. What is Cuba, based on your experiences, how it has been betrayed in the West, particularly in the U.S., and what you have come in contact experience with based upon your interaction with Cuba and Cuban people?
Right. I have made my first trip to Cuba in 1996. I had the privilege to accompany Lucius Walker, Reverend Lucius Walker of Pastors for Peace, who's now unfortunately left us. This was after he and five other people had gone on a hunger strike for over 70 days to protest the U.S. Confiscating computers that they were taking to Cuba as part of the Pastors for Peace convoy. Those computers were intended to tie together the hospitals and the pharmacies because of the U.S. embargo. Medicines are scarce. Some medicines are scarce in Cuba, and so this would have enabled doctors to, or does now enable doctors to know where the medicines that they need are. I was struck by two things on that visit, because most of my experience up to that point had been trips to Nicaragua, and that was that even in the countryside, all the children had shoes, and that the hospitals were in better shape than the Olympic training facilities. So I think both of those things are emblematic of the kind of society that Cuba has built since the revolution, where there aren't a small number of rich and privileged people and a large mass of poor and downtrodden people, but rather great equality.
Okay, let's talk about this question of Cuba in the context of this concept that we call a democracy, how people get to participate within that society and how resources are dealt with it within this particular society. How do y'all view Cuba around this concept of people having the means and instrument to make decisions that affect their lives, and how does it this concept of democracy play out as we view it and have experience in the West, like i.e. in the United States, when you're talking about political power and really how resources are made based upon one's ability to have access to them? How would you describe your experiences talking to the people, Skip, in Cuba, and how you described the whole concept, how they dealt with this concept, with dealing with this concept of the people participation as it relates to making decisions that affect their lives in this concept of democracy. Contrast that with how is that the United States and the people?
Well, I think first and foremost, man, the biggest contradiction is that the Cuban people use their natural resources for the health and the security for the majority of the society. Yeah.
Go ahead, Skip. You still on?
Yeah. Hold on just a second. So, yeah, I'm sorry. You still there?
Yeah, you still there. Go on.
Okay, and I was saying that in the Cuban context, their natural resources, the profit from their society, has always went for the care of the majority of the society. In the case of free schools, free hospitals, and the question particularly of education and putting so many resources in education, the whole question of housing, how they control housing, you know, how the society is organized to participate, come up with ideas with it, which are best for the whole total society, not just particular stratus. I think that's the, you know, the wiping out of private property, you know, the humanity of the society, you know, particularly in the black community, where, you know, you go out to Havana, you don't see any guys selling drugs on the corner. You don't see massive kind of, you know, predatory kind of acts among one another. You don't see black Cubans shooting black Cubans, you know, guys killing each other. It hasn't happened, you know, in spite of the economic problems that they have. That type of culture is not there. Too bad violence is in the black community as it is in the United States. I mean, I think that's the thing that comes to my mind. You know, I've been there 10, 15 times where there's been 700,000-800,000 people on the Malecon, 95% of them black, all at peace with one another. You know, you can't get 50,000 black folks together in the States in that kind of environment. It's a different social psychology, that whole thing of harming people. It's not there in the Cuban society, particularly among the black.
Brother Chuck, how would you respond to that question?
In the United States, we have liberal democracy or representative democracy. That was a system that was created to protect the property of white males, and that's pretty much still what it does today. In Cuba and Venezuela, Nicaragua, and some of the other countries of Latin America, they're working on what's called participatory democracy, where people at their local level meet together and as equals and determine what their needs are and what the solutions to their problems are, and that those bodies get larger and larger up to the national level. In Cuba, every position except the position of president is an elected position. Now, people have democracy in their factories, in their workplaces, the professions, on every level that's important. Cubans have more democracy than we have in the United States.
That is real. Totally contrast from what we see and hear from the media institutions inside the U.S. In terms of their last statement, you say they have more of a democracy. They're hard to believe if you constantly listen to the press in the West. But let me raise this fundamental question in terms of for both of y'all. What is the major issue of why there is a embargo, a blockade against Cuba? What is the problem the U.S. has with Cuba? Because I understand Cuba has never done anything to the U.S. What is the historical basis of why there's such a problem?
I'll let my man go ahead and say it. Go ahead, my brother. Just, I'd like to hear his side of that one.
The embargo is a outdated punishment of Cuba for not recognizing its proper role as a U.S. client state. It's the U.S. at the time, 1959, when the revolution took place in Cuba, had total control of Latin America and most of the Caribbean, and believed that was its, I guess, God-given right to have that empire. And Cuba showed them wrong, and has been showing them wrong now for over 50 years, and has provided the inspiration for other countries to free themselves. Venezuela, Nicaragua, Bolivia, Ecuador, etc. The embargo has obviously failed utterly. There's no logical sense to continue it, but U.S. foreign policy is still stuck in that imperialist trench, and they continue to just blindly go on as they have before, not recognizing how much the world has changed.
Okay. Brother Skip, what's your take on it?
Well, I think basically it's been a battle of ideas, a way of life, an alternative that the Western world has chosen. The Western world has tried to make the dominant force in the society. And I think going back to the early 60s, the Cuban decided to go a different way, a way that the United States ruling class was unable to accept and still hasn't accepted. And it's taken a great toll on the Cuban people, man. The Cuban people have sacrificed greatly to have their own form of independence, to put their own leadership, to be able to make their own decisions. That police blockade is rough, cruel. What it does to people, you know what I mean? They can't buy medicine. You know, the harm that this blockade has done by the American government, you can't measure it in words. It's been painful, man. They have strangled the society, but they have chosen to fight and to struggle. I think that's even in the case of Obama. You know what I mean? I think there's a political issue that we need to think about. And that is, how do we, black Americans, support Obama
Okay, we with you. Let me just raise this question in terms of this issue of this question of Cuban solidarity policy. We recognize that they have taken a major impact economically in terms of the effects of the blockade. But how have they been able to maintain their solidarity with the rest of the world? We know they are known for sending doctors all over the world, particularly in Africa and countries in Central and South America. We notice that they are willing to share that technology with the world. What allowed them to cultivate this kind of attitude and this kind of policy? Skip or Chuck, either one.
Did we lose Skip? Seemed like he cut off right in the middle of a sentence.
Can you repeat that, Chuck?
I said, did we lose Skip? It seemed like he cut off in the middle of a thought.
Yeah, I'm back, man.
Okay.
Went dead.
Yeah, okay, it happens sometimes. But we're just talking about what allowed the Cuban to have such a great solidarity policy where they have aid and help African people and countries and people of all color all over the world. What allows them to foster that kind of humanity?
Yeah, but I think we got to ask Obama a big question, man. Why doesn't Obama want to lift the blockade? I mean, here's a black guy who has been successful. 99% of all the people of African descent are against the blockade. It's biblically, it's a crime to deny a person a glass of water, try to starvation a person. They're not a military threat. Why does not a black president lift the economic blockade? I think that's a question we need to ask ourselves.
Yes,
this is the second term. Now, what's the consequences of him lifting the blockade?
That's an excellent question. And why do you think that issue is not being raised in the context of the African leadership in this country, who are aware of the positive role that Cuba has played historically with African people and liberation movements in Africa and even in the 60s and throughout historically? Why do you think there's been a lack of response from black leadership in terms of raising that question?
Well, I defer to Skip on that question.
Yeah, I think we just lost Skip. We're having a problem with his number. But can you, Chuck, at least speak to the issue of what is the relation and the role that Cuba has played at the present time, looking at what's going on in Central South America? And how does that relate to oppressed communities in the United States?
You actually gave the answer in the way that you framed the question. It's Cuba's solidarity with other countries of the world that has led to the prominent role that it plays. I know during the 1980s in Nicaragua, there was a joke that you couldn't take a stroll in the countryside without tripping over a Cuban doctor. Cuba requires its doctors to perform 2 years of service in a undeveloped country before they can practice medicine in Cuba. That has saved uncounted number of lives and suffering. Compare that to the kind of aid that the United States gives that has all kinds of strings attached, and where 3 out of every $4 never leaves the banks in New York because the money is paid to U.S. companies to provide services. Cuba shares what it has without condition, and other countries in the world recognize that difference and celebrate and support Cuba for its solidarity.
Okay, we'd like to let our audience know we have about a few, 5-6 minutes left. We can open their phone lines. If you'd like to give your views or comments based upon the subject area today, we're talking about Cuba, its relationship to us, the U.S., and just the things that you heard about Cuba. What is the real reality? We are discussing this with our guests, Brother Chuck and Brother Skip. They are giving their perspectives on the subject area. And you can feel free to call in at 323-679-0841. That's 323-679-0841. Chuck, one of the things I must have you talk a little bit about is, can you just tell us the significance of who is the Cuban Five and why should we come to their aid?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question because I'm in Tucson, Arizona, and one of the Cuban Five, Fernando Gonzalez, is in a federal prison in Safford, Arizona, 2 hours from here. His mother and two sisters got a visa and are here visiting him right now. The prison only allows visitation on weekends, so there's a small group of us that host his family during the week and then drive them down and back and forth from the prison to visit him. And next weekend it'll be my turn to drive them down to the prison. But the Cuban Five are five Cubans who were sent by Cuba to infiltrate anti-Castro terrorist groups based in Miami, such as Brothers to the Rescue and other groups that have committed bombings and other acts of terrorism in Cuba. After they got the evidence, Cuba turned the evidence over to the United States, and instead of the United States arresting the terrorists, they arrested the Cuban Five. and sentenced them to long prison terms. One of them has a sentence of 2 consecutive life sentences. You know, at most what they were guilty of was failure to register as a foreign agent. Certainly nothing that should give long prison terms. It's been over 14 years now. One of the Cuban Five has served his term, but he's not allowed to return to Cuba until he served 3 years on probation in Miami, where his life is in danger every day. When you hear it read in the press or hear U.S. officials talking about the war on terrorism, the war on terrorism is a lie. There are good terrorists and bad terrorists in U.S. foreign policy, and the government supports
I noticed, Chuck, that case, the Cuban Five case, is well known and supported all over the world. The whole international community is in support of Cuban Five and demanding the U.S. to release them and return them back home. And why is it that hasn't been done? What do you think needs to be done in order for that to take place? Or what can the people of the United States do to help speed up the process and demand?
Well, yeah, we couldn't stop the invasion of Iraq. It's hard to, you know, we haven't been able to release Mumia Abu-Jamal or Leonard Peltier or other U.S. political prisoners. All we can do is keep raising the issue and pointing out the injustice of the U.S. injustice system and keep agitating for the release of these five heroes.
We have a call on that. Caller, your question or comment, please. We're talking about Cuba. What is it tonight, guys? Caller 3330. Yes, caller 3330.
I'm
your question?
In.
Good morning.
I will make a comment.
Yes, go ahead.
I want to say that Western Hemisphere policy to Cuba is one that represents disillusionment, because it's not a matter of fairness or trying to create a positive dialogue, but it's about antagonization towards a nation that has long stood in contrary to the principles of Western imperialism.
Okay, Carla. Guest, would you like to respond to that comment? Thank you, sort of hit it on the head. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it.
We have about 2 minutes remaining on the program. Chuck, can you give our people some ideas? How can we be in solidarity with Cuba? What can the people do to help end the blockade and demand the Cuba Five is free and go back home?
Well, we need to keep demanding of our elected officials that the embargo be lifted, that, you know, we have a right as citizens to travel anywhere in the world that we want to travel, and that includes travel to Cuba. Also, there are many ways to go to Cuba, some of them legal and others of them not legal, and there's nothing that changes a person's perspective more than going to a place and witnessing for themselves the reality rather than getting that reality filtered through the U.S. corporate media. So I would encourage everyone who can to go to Cuba. I believe, don't you have a trip to Cuba
coming
up?
Yes, we would like to alert our audience that if you get cut off for the program, it's complete. You can check the entirety of this program at the archive by dialing in www.blogtalkradio.com/African on the move. www.blogtalkradio.com/Africa on the move. Yes, there's a group called the African Women Association. It's taking a Black History Freedom Ride tour to Cuba for July 23rd to April the 5th. For more information, you can dial, the number is 202-714-9435. 202-714-9435. In closing, Chuck, again, can you tell the people how can they participate one more time and how can they find out more about some of the activities that's going on with your organization?
I'm sure. Our website, again, is www.afgj.org. That's the initials of Alliance for Global Justice. We offer delegations to several different countries. We don't currently take delegations to Cuba, but there are numerous groups that do. You can probably just Google Cuba trips and find that on the web.
On that note, we'd like to thank our guests, Dr. Skip Bailey and Chuck Coughlin, for sharing their views and perspective on Cuba, its relationship to us, as well as the issue around the blockade of Five. We'd like to inform our audience that you can find out more information if you go to the website on the Five by going to www.thecubanfive.org. That's www.thecubanfive.org. And for those Africans who are interested in going to see in Cuba for themselves, they can join the African Awareness Association Black History Freedom Ride Tour of Cuba. It's from July 23rd to August 5th. The cost is a round trip ticket for everything inclusive, $2,500. And you can get more information by either emailing African_Awareness_Association@yahoo.com, or you can call 202-714-9435. Until next time, we'd like to share with the audience that Cuba is not our enemy, it's our friend. Cuba has a great track of humanity, of supporting humanity and just cause. Let's be in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in Cuba. And let's end the blockade. Let's free the fire, let them come home, and let's allow Cuba to be whatever they want to be. They have the right to self-determination. Until next time, this is Africa on the Move. We thank you.